You're listening to The Takeaway from WNYC and PRI Public Radio International in collaboration with the BBC World Service, The New York Times, and WGBH Radio Boston.
So the location of the United Nations headquarters in New York means the east side of Manhattan, once a year around this time, lives the conflicts of nations and tolerates the entourages of the powerful. Protests, heads of state, parking spaces, and global politics. Joining us from the plaza outside the United Nations headquarters is Bob Henley, senior reporter for our co-producer WNYC. Good morning, Bob.
Good morning.
So, Bob, how is the Arab Spring, the situation over statehood for Israel, which is expected to come to a head on Friday, and everything else complicated the issue this year for the General Assembly?
Well, it means here at Dag Hammarskjöld Plaza, which, of course, is named for the Swedish diplomat and economist and author who was an early secretary of the Secretary General of the UN, who died in a plane crash, actually, on September 18th, 1961, on a peace mission to the Congo. This is the place where all the world's protests will have an opportunity to be heard. And today, John, there's like a dozen, everything from the students from Free Tibet to Coalition for Jewish Concerns to, you know, the new Iran movement. And so they're all going to be here. And it comes at a time when President Obama's got quite a privet. He's trying to be his most combative domestically, setting up his reelection bid, while facing his most significant international challenge to be a peacemaker and make a path to peace in the Middle East and a two-state solution. It's a tough one.
And do the New Yorkers support the president here or wish the UN would just go away once a year?
No, I think that generally people are engaged with that. This is part of the New York brand.
Having the United Nations present.
Exactly, John.
And certainly the tensions will rise as we get towards the end of the week as Mahmoud Abbas, who may or may not meet with his Israeli counterpart, is expected to actually formally ask for Israeli statehood in the United Nations General Assembly. Watching all on the east side of Manhattan, Bob Henley, senior reporter for our co-producer WNYC. Thanks so much, Bob.
The Palestinians will seek membership in the United Nations this week, expected sometime on Friday, but they're not alone in their quest for membership. John Sudworth, correspondent for our partner, the BBC, has been looking into this twilight world of countries that don't quite exist.
Oh God, we praise and glorify you for your grace upon course, the land of great warriors.
For any fledgling state looking to assert its independence, the national anthem, of course, is the easy bit. But South Sudan has much more than just a song. 2 months ago, its hard-won freedom was given an important international seal of approval when it became the latest country, the 193rd, to be precise, to join the United Nations.
Getting admitted to the UN brings with it quite a number of privileges.
William Worcester is a lecturer in international law at The Hague University of Applied Sciences. UN membership, he points out, requires the unanimous backing of the five permanent members of the Security Council, followed by only a majority vote of the General Assembly. It doesn't automatically mean, therefore, that everyone accepts your legitimacy as a state, but a seat at the UN certainly helps you to walk and talk like a real state.
You can sign treaties, you can do all sorts of things that you wouldn't be able to do in another context. And one of the most important is that in the UN Charter, there is the obligation on the member states not to use force against each other. That's a huge protection. That's a huge legal protection.
В Тирасполе 6 часов утра. Доброе утро. Сегодня вторник, 16 ноября.
There are plenty of other examples of countries that don't quite exist. This radio broadcast is from the breakaway Republic of Transnistria that seceded from the former Soviet Republic of Moldova in 1990. Despite soldiering on bravely, Transnistria has won official recognition from almost no one. William Worcester says such examples demonstrate the fact that statehood itself is hard to define, with international lawyers disagreeing over whether a state exists because it says it does, or whether it officially exists only when others say it does.
Do I exist? Or do you exist? Or perhaps you only know I exist if I talk to you, or if I hit you. All of a sudden, We see that international law has a difficult time wrapping its head around it, tries to come up with definitions and clarifications. And I think that's the reason why it's so easy for this discussion to so quickly break down.
In the end, of course, it's the politics that often matter more than the legal niceties.
Kosovo could no longer hover in space, neither here nor there.
Dr. Mohamed Hamiti is the Kosovan ambassador to the UK. Since 2008, Kosovo has won recognition from more than 80 UN member states, including Britain. Its big problem is that Serbia, the former ruling power, has an influential ally, Russia, which wields a Security Council veto and can therefore prevent Kosovo from achieving what it craves, a seat at the UN.
It provides a nation the finality it needs in terms of being a member of the Community of Free Nations. We would wish this to happen in the next few years. It might take a bit longer, but we will be there, certainly.
Oh, black warriors, let us stand.
So while South Sudan celebrates its recent leap to full international recognition, other fledgling countries seem destined to languish in no man's land. Palestinian officials will be the next to stake their claim using similar arguments to those from Kosovo, that they already have many of the trappings of statehood and that they have already won recognition from many other individual nations. They will, of course, run into equally strong political headwinds in their bid for a UN seat.
That report from John Sudworth, correspondent for our partner, the BBC. One of those headwinds, of course, is the United States. The U.S. has said it will veto the Palestinian request.
And the Palestinian request for statehood is unique, I think, in the history of those examples that Sudworth mentioned. Here's a trivia question for you.
They're useful examples, though.
Well, do you know the colors of Transnistria?
No.
The colors of the Transnistrian flag?
No.
Anybody? Anybody? Huh? Huh? Red and green. And you know what Dniester means? It refers to the Dniester River, which is right on the edge of Ukraine and Moldova
Nice.
And Romania. No, no, it's the Dniester River. It's very strange spelling.
Maybe it could be a name of a new company from Netflix.
Transnistria? Transnistria, it sounds like something wrong with your sinuses, though.
We'll continue to bring you updates about the Palestinian bid for membership.
For relief of Transnistria, I'm going to get
all week long.
Transnistrians
are going
to be, like,
bad.
Freaking
everywhere
out over
you're going
me,
is not good. No.
I'm David Remnick, host of the New Yorker Radio Hour. There's nothing like finding a story you can really sink into that lets you tune out the noise and focus on what matters. In print or here on the podcast, the New Yorker brings you thoughtfulness and depth and even humor that you can't find anywhere else. So please join me every week for the New Yorker Radio Hour, wherever you listen to podcasts.